evening is Camilla Alexander. Camilla A. Alexander is a PhD candidate. Now you're doctor? Okay. Dr. Camilla A. Alexander received her PhD at the University of Pennsylvania School of Nursing. Congratulations. She was a Ruth L. Kirshenstein Individual NRSA Predoctoral Fellow in the Centers for Health Equity Research and Global Women's Health, where she was mentored by nurse scientist Dr. Loretta Sweet Jamat. Her dissertation research explored the meanings of effective processes on sexual experiences and decision-making among Black emerging adult women ages 18 to 25 years old.
I apologize for not updating my biography. I am currently, as you see at the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing, a postdoctoral fellow where I'm honored to be mentored by Dr. Jackie Campbell and on a T32 that looks at the intersection of HIV and intimate partner abuse. So Dr. Davila, your presentations are very timely and I'm glad I was able to learn from you today. So what I'm going to present on today with my co-author, Dr. Jamat, who was also my mentor at Penn, is a portion of my dissertation work. And basically, I'm really excited to talk to you about it. And I failed to include the acknowledgement that I just gave. I have no financial disclosures. To begin, we all have heard that sexual health morbidities and young women are going hand in hand in today's society, particularly adolescents and women under the age of 25 are particularly vulnerable. So the Centers for Disease Control has implemented efforts at community, group, and individual levels through interventions, and however, HIV rates continue to climb among this group of women. So as was said, I did my research looking at this particular group of women that are 18 to 25 or emerging adults. And they are particularly vulnerable because of biological issues. They have male contact, primarily heterosexual contact, and because of the social context in which they're living. So emerging adulthood is a theory that was developed by psychologist Jeffrey Arnett. However, public health investigations about this particular group are rare. They generally tend to be grouped among larger populations along with adolescents, or they're grouped along with women up to the ages of 65. However, this group has age-specific cognitive and affective developmental differences in terms of looking at their understanding of sexual intimacy. They're developing intimate relationships in a different way than they were when they were in adolescence, as well as when they're adults, they're going to be looking at intimacy in a different way. They're looking for relationships that are going to endure a little bit longer, but not quite as long as a young adult woman that's over 25. And these impact the decisions that they make relating to sexual relationships. In terms of reproduction and pregnancy desires, during this transition between adolescence and young adulthood, young women are culturally influenced. So we can see that Black women, Black and Latino women, tend to have an average age of their first childbearing at 22 and 23 years old, which is smack dab in the middle of emerging adulthood. Whereas white women tend to delay their childbearing until the age of 26. And this group of Black and Latino women also tend to be at the highest risk of STDs and HIV transmission. So our current studies are focusing largely on adolescents or women living with HIV when they're looking at reproduction and pregnancy desires. With those groups, we tend to have a more comprehensive approach. With adolescents, we're interested in keeping them from becoming pregnant or becoming infected with STIs or HIV. With women that are infected with HIV, the very same things. So the interventions that we implement with those populations tend to be more comprehensively focused and include ways to prevent transmission as well as prevent pregnancy. However, with this particular group, as we can see, because Black and Latina women are, their pregnancy desires are often transitioning, and there's less judgment going on in terms of whether or not there's a kind of a moral imperative about whether women in this age group should or should not becoming pregnant. There's a dilemma for sexual health programming as we continue to compartmentalize our focus. Either we are giving messages to women that they should prevent HIV or infection transmission, or they should prevent pregnancy if they desire. During my dissertation, I developed a concept called sexual security that evokes the pattern changes that women are experiencing in emotional well-being that informs their sexual decisions. So basically, we've been approaching prevention efforts using cognitive approaches, such as telling women to use condoms, to limit their partners, to get tested, and those require cognitive decisions. However, in my research, I found that many, many women, most of them, are making those decisions using from an emotional standpoint, and therefore we need to broaden our scope of understanding how women are making those decisions. Most women are in flux between security and insecurity, in terms of feeling secure in their sexual situations or feeling insecure in their sexual situations. And they attach that to how they make meaning out of their relationships and the previous sexual experiences that they're having. So many women are encountering emotional vulnerabilities as well as relationship experiences that they're carrying to their future relationships, and that's informing their sexual decisions. So that's what sexual security refers to. So our comprehensive intervention strategies should be broader than promoting condom use. And there are many researchers out there that are using more comprehensive approaches and include some strategies that are influenced by emotions. So some scientists are evoking gender and ethnic pride. They're asking women to care about their communities by caring about themselves. And they're promoting personal relationship strengthening as strategies to prevent HIV. So we decided to do a literature review using the following research question. We wanted to know, in what ways do researchers attend to contextual and affective components of sexual activity to promote sexual health among emerging adult women? Our first study aim was to analyze the CDC's best and good evidence HIV behavioral interventions that targeted this group of women, and we wanted to make applicable recommendations for public health nursing practice. So the factors that we were focusing on are developmental age, reproduction and pregnancy desires, as well as sexual security and relationship experiences. We were looking to see if those elements were present in the interventions that are currently being promoted as best and good evidence by the CDC. So just an overview of the CDC's Prevention Research Synthesis Project. There's an ongoing systematic review of interventions that establish a continuum of intervention strength. So they're using these tiers of evidence in which they evaluate interventions. And then tiers 1 and 2, they are evidence-based interventions, and tiers 3 and 4 are theory-based interventions. And the higher the tier, the more rigorously they are considered to be evaluated. There are two chapters. One is the risk reduction chapter, and one is looking at medication adherence. The risk reduction chapter includes 74 interventions that are considered good or best practice by the CDC. we were interested in the risk reduction chapter only. This was last updated in August 2011. So we did a literature review and critical analysis, and our inclusion criteria were that all the research must have been performed in the United States, that the study sample included participants ages 18 to 25 years old, and that the sample had greater than or equal to at least 40% women. All of the research participants needed to have spoken English, and then we targeted women that were engaging in sex with men. Additionally, the primary source was peer-reviewed. We excluded studies if they were done only at the community level and did not include individual measures, or if the primary outcome was drug-using behaviors. So we used three questions to guide our analysis. The first question was, are factors of developmental age accounted for in the curriculum? How are authors looking at reproduction and pregnancy desires? And are affective approaches to decision-making attended to in the intervention? Our process was that we looked at articles three times. The first time we looked to see if there was the intervention was relevant to our research study question, meaning that we were looking to see if they should be if they met our inclusion criteria. Then we wanted to look and see if our study aims were present in the curriculum content. And then our third read confirmed information from the first two readings. So as I said, we reviewed 74 total interventions that were in the risk reduction chapter. 46 of those interventions had large samples of adult women. There's a large number that included adolescents only, but 46 did include adult women. However, we had to exclude 29 because the mean age of the women that were included in those studies were under 18 or they were greater than 25 years old, so, meaning that the lion's share of the women that were included in the study were not were not emerging adults. Or we also excluded studies that had less than 25% of the sample being 18 to 25 years old. So there were 17 interventions that met the criteria. All at least were theoretically based, meaning that they were between tiers 1 and 4. And the curricula detail that we were able to find within the literature was variable. Some of the studies gave us point by point everything that they were doing in their intervention. Some gave us broad strokes. So there's one of the limitations to this work is that we were unable to get the exact curricula for each and every study that we reviewed. However, we reviewed all outcomes as they were reported. So the results, looking at the study aim that examined developmental age, were that we had age ranges that varied between 18 to 25 or 18 to 69 years old. And as I said earlier, that 18 to 25 year olds have a unique developmental and age specific experiences that are not often accounted for when they're lumped in with other age groups. The mean ages were 18.6 to 31.3. We did not note any age-specific strategies as noted by the authors. However, Kershaw from Yale did analyze his results by age group. So he found that 15 to 19-year-olds had decreased STIs post-intervention, and 20 to 25-year-olds had no change. He did not move further to try to analyze what that meant, but he's also a psychologist, and the intervention was a comprehensive intervention that was looking at pregnancy as well as HIV. It was the only one that was doing that. So I thought that was interesting. Post-intervention follow-up was between 3 months and 3 years, so the average was 6 months to a year. And some other time markers that were included were mean age of sexual debut, which was largely a descriptive variable, and the number of sex partners that participants had prior to entering the study. In terms of reproductive and pregnancy desires, HIV and STI prevention was maintained separate from pregnancy prevention, except for in Kershaw and colleagues' article. There were five studies that were excluded, that excluded pregnant or desiring women in their studies. Jamat's study conducted a trial in an obstetrical care setting, although she did exclude women that were pregnant, but she did not exclude any desiring women. In Earhart's study, she included condom use, a discussion in the curriculum about balancing pregnancy desires and condom use and HIV prevention. And then Scholes tailored their intervention to accommodate women with children. So there was an acknowledgement that these women that we were trying to intervene with are childbearing. Two of the studies did have inclusion criteria that were specific to childbearing women. However, they did not discuss competing fertility desires in the curriculum. In terms of sexual security, at the individual level, there were quite a few authors that talked about cognitive coping strategies and looking at feelings and emotions. So there were discussions of stress management, sexual self-control, understanding your behavioral triggers, and then also processing perceptions of guilt and vulnerability that went along with sex and sexuality with the partner that you felt you were at risk. At the interpersonal level, they discussed partner reactions to condom use negotiations, including anger and misplaced trust and how to negotiate the condoms in the face of those emotions. They also talked about managing unwanted advances, including refusing sex, processing feelings of rejection, and handling partner dissatisfaction. At the community level, there was a lot of discussion of pride promotion, particularly interventions that were targeting women that were racial and ethnic minority women. There was discussion of sexual rights in order to, as a strategy to get women to want to protect themselves. And then this concept of communal affectance or protective activities. So appealing to the woman to protect herself, her community, and her family by engaging in safe activities. And one author asked about women's feelings about the device and how that impacted their relationship. So what we determined from examining these studies is that we still have very little information about how to implement interventions that will be sustainable and applicable across the life course, particularly for this particular age group of 18 to 25-year-olds. The unique developmental needs of emerging adults were largely overlooked, and there were short-term intervention outcomes, and we didn't use a learning model framework in order to get the intervention information across. Largely cognitive approaches, including skill building, were included. And pregnancy intention and HIV, the intersection of pregnancy intention and HIV prevention in this age group requires a great deal of further research. In terms of sexual security, there were a lot of authors that used, that looked at feelings and emotions at the individual and community level. And interpersonal level, needs further development, because there was largely a focus on negative feelings with your partner, and few studies included concepts of love and intimacy, which are largely present in a lot of relationships and affect sexual decisions. In terms of implications, we are suggesting that we should encourage individualized safety definitions be developed between the nurse and the client. We need to expand the menu of options that we're offering to women, including pleasure activities, particularly for this age group when they're having larger numbers of partners. We should allow those definitions to evolve as they move through different relations experiences and experience vulnerability. During this period of time, frequent partner changes are normal, and we should acknowledge that that's part of healthy sexual development, as well as we need to recognize competing priorities for pregnancy and infection prevention, particularly in this age group, and work through a process of how women can understand the best ways to protect themselves. Finally, in terms of assessment, we think that we should elicit desired outcomes from sexual activity that are particular to the woman, whether it be economic stability, sexual pleasure, or a caring relationship, and then work from there. So we could ask questions such as, how do you feel when you're in love? How did you handle those feelings in previous relationships? And what do you do when you're lonely or sad? And then that would help us to understand how women are making decisions from their emotions, and then how to help them to figure out the safest way to be in their relationship. And that's it. Thank you.